One of them wanted to be the security guy. He claimed he was a security guy.
Hey, welcome to another technical version of Security Guard. Mr. Jarvis, do you have your think cap on today?
Yes, I do.
This will be a highly technical show. And our Miss Suresh Cybergal, unfortunately, couldn't make it. We're not sure what happened. Nonetheless, I shall get through this because I have the ability to understand technical things. So we're going to talk today about something I'm really excited about. This, I think, is kind of the new thing. And our guest is Paul Paget, and he's with Pony Express. And welcome to the show, Paul.
Thanks, Chuck. Good to see you.
Now, let's get the boring stuff out of the way. Tell us how we can get a hold of your, you know, your website and how to get a hold of your Twitter and all that kind of stuff.
Sure, thanks. It's so it's Pony Express. It's spelled P-W-N, as pwn means to own or to hack or to be beaten in a game. But it's Pony, P-W-N-I-E, Express, just as it sounds, E-X-P-R-E-S-S, and .com. And then pretty active on Twitter on security topics with at Pony Express, and then mine is at Paul Paget, my name.
Now, we were going to meet at Black Hat, and we had it scheduled, and a couple of things happened. I think we wound up doing 50 shows, and you were rolling out something there, which is kind of interesting we'll talk about. But let me make sure I get this right. What Pony Express does is you find devices on a network that are either kind of rogue, misconfigured through Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, that you didn't know were on the network. Is that a good way to describe it?
That's right. And it's not just Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, but it's also on the wire as well. I mean, people are plugging things in at will and turning things on at will. And so this has become a big problem for companies.
Now, how much of this is because of bring your own device? That's happened recently where it's not the company's cell phone anymore. It's yours. And, you know, this is causing some of these problems.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, in 2017, I think most companies, I think it's about half of the devices in organizations will belong to the employees. And if you think about the generation of workers that are coming in now, the millennials, they don't know how to go to work or school or anything without their stuff. So, you know, they prefer to bring their own devices to work. And even if they're issued things, they'll still use their own computers and phones and whatever they think they need. So, and a lot of organizations and a lot of management look at it from the standpoint, hey, we don't have to buy you something. And you're also, you're going to get more productivity out of these folks. They want to use the stuff that they're used to using. So it's like any craftsman or, you know, if you go to the auto mechanic shop, they bring their own tools to work. They have for years. It's
right.
The same concept, right? So
now this must be a big challenge because there's, you know, there's the top three big phone manufacturers, but there's a whole bunch of other ones, literally dozens and dozens of different types of phones and manufacturers. Does that play into anything that's a challenge to you as far as identifying them?
Not really. I mean, the phones are all designed with they're very friendly. They want to talk to every kind of network that's out there, and they broadcast a lot of information about themselves. Primarily on Wi-Fi, they broadcast a MAC address, and fortunately, those MAC addresses are cataloged by manufacturer, so you can figure out, hey, this is an Apple iPhone 6, or this is an Android phone, or whatever the manufacturer is. It's pretty simple for us to figure that out. So it's not a hidden thing. It's they're friendly devices, and they advertise who they are and what they are.
Now, define for us what you mean by a rogue device, or I mean, I get if it's somebody that's a hacker trying to get in there, but we're really also talking about, I bring my phone, I'm a straight guy, I'm okay, I'm innocently putting my phone on there, but somebody else has access to my phone. Is that part of the problem?
Well, it's a myriad of things. That's one of the things. I mean, your phone could be, if it's not owned and controlled by the company, they have limited options as far as updating or patching the phone or things like that. They don't know where the phone has been. They don't know what other networks you've connected to. They don't know if someone has compromised your phone. Somebody else has the credentials to your phone. And in many cases, while you're at work, most cases they can't see whether your phone's connected to the organization or connected to the coffee shop across the street or the bad guy in the parking lot. So it's
Now why is that? I would have assumed that that's something that the network guy at the studio pays attention to. Is it just that's just not what they do, and so they need Pony Express to come in there and do it right?
Well, according to the research we've done, most organizations cannot see the computers and the devices that are plugged into remote locations. In headquarters, they're pretty good, but the networks have been tightened down in locations with firewalls. They've been, you know, sort of surrounded by security products, and the ability to see and know what's being plugged in would it, from a say a central location where the IT people might be, has been hampered greatly, because to open up a view from headquarters means you're opening up holes in the network, and so there's sort of this conflict of protecting organizations. You take retail, for example, and we know some of the great retail compromises that have happened. They generally happen in stores and in warehouses in remote locations, and the people in headquarters cannot necessarily see what's being plugged into those networks. So it's not just wireless, it's wired, and then you add Bluetooth, and it just gets complicated as more devices come in.
What kind of numbers are we talking about? If you say 50% of people bring their phone to work, do you have a stat on how many actual phones that is? We're talking hundreds of millions, I would assume.
Well, I don't necessarily know phones. I don't have the you know, by manufacturer. But if you think of it, if you go back to 2000, there were a billion computers in use, all right, a billion devices in business. Today, there's 6 billion. And by 2020, according to Gartner, there'll be 20 billion. And of the 20 billion, about a third of those are in business. So say 6 or 7 billion devices, which range from phones, the computers, the printers, to anything else that you may use. In the industrial space, for example, the security, the business of running a power plant or running a manufacturing plant is being now, you know, it's been a lot of Internet of Things devices implemented to run those operations. So those are devices that are known, but the average employee is bringing in their own things, and those things are not known by the company, and the company has limited options as far as how they can deal with that. So it's kind of a social problem, and to the extent that I don't want the company spying on me, I don't want them tracking my phone, but at the same time, how does the company secure itself from these devices? And they have no idea where they've been and what risks they present to the organization.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about the confidentiality, because I know this applies to California. I've had experience with it, and it may apply to other states. But if you bring your phone from work and you plug it into my, you know, studio network here, and as my employee, as the employer, I start to own that data, right? In other words, I can say, listen, you're using your phone, but it's on my network. I can look at your emails. I can look at your phone. I can look at your texts. Have you come across this in any with companies configuring things? Do they have different privacy laws in different places?
It varies quite a bit. What we found with organizations, Chuck, is if you're on premise, whether it's the wired or the wireless network, companies feel they have a right to track the device. Now, as far as the data goes, that varies. If it's on the network, absolutely, it's their data. If it's on the wireless network, it's their data. But the inspection of the phone itself, looking inside that phone, looking at the data that's on that phone, in most organizations, they feel that crosses the line, because that's going to have other information. But information you're transmitting is absolutely up for grabs. And it's, if you're on premise using company facilities, it's no different than when you walk into a building and you sort of give up certain rights. You go through a scanner in some cases. You have your ID checked. There's cameras that are tracking your movements throughout a facility. It's the same sort of thing with your computing devices, and that's how companies think of it. Today, that's what we see when they look at putting in a sensor system, let's say, to track devices coming and going. What are they doing? What are they there for? That sort of thing. So there's lines of privacy that seem to be sort of naturally following other models of inspecting things, inspecting people and things when they come into a facility.
It's kind of similar to the old shopkeeper privilege. Back in the day, you know, from common law that says it's my shop, and I got a right to search your bag when you go out to make sure you didn't steal something. They've changed those laws a little bit, but it's interesting how the technology gets in front of the law, and we don't know what to do about it. It's always always way ahead recently, right? Because it's so it moves so fast.
When we go in, and again, I don't, you know, we're not, we look at what the laws are, but they're, again, you're right. The laws haven't necessarily been written for some of these things, but you go back to things that are common practices. So, for example, if we put in one of our systems that's going to track things coming in and out, what they're doing and so on, organizations will say, hey, maybe we ought to put up a sign, just like we put up a sign for video surveillance saying, we are tracking the devices coming and going from the facility, that sort of thing.
So makes a lot of sense.
That's how they think about it. I mean, their legal departments, you know, are not jumping up and saying you can't do this. The companies have, according to the Center for Internet Security, they have a fundamental responsibility. One of the most critical controls, the number one control, is to know the assets that are on your network. If you don't know the assets on your network, that's considered rule number one of security. So. Right. And I think you know that. So, I mean, this is something that they feel that it's they need to play catch up in this. Right now, they don't know their assets, and that's a problem.
They don't even have,
you know, BYOD policies. 80% of organizations don't have a policy today. So,
wait, hold on a second. Security guard has to clear his ears. 80% don't have a BYOD policy?
That's right.
That's amazing.
Yeah, less than half do. And the ones that we talked to, another chunk are in the process of developing them, but most organizations don't have a clear BYOD policy.
Well, we find this in workplace violence. A lot of them don't have a workplace violence policy, and that's required by OSHA, and they still don't have them, right? It's very interesting. Now, here's what I worry about. I sit up late at night worrying about weird things. One of them is I don't think I want to buy that new refrigerator that has my grocery list that's going to send me a text because, you know what, that's the way into the network. And am I wrong about that? Does Pony Express detect those sort of devices? Because in theory, the refrigerator could be on the network at Boeing, in theory,
well,
right?
Yeah, well, today we do wired, wireless, and Bluetooth, and we're looking at doing Zigbee and Z-Wave. Some of the appliances you talk about use a frequency that's shorter range, that takes less energy and that sort of thing. And while you'll see hacks on those devices by the security community, you'll see tests and so on. There was a recent one done on door locks. I think at DEF CON, 12 out of the 16 Bluetooth door locks that they were testing, they were able to hack right there at the show live. So you'll see a lot of that sort of activity. What organizations are worried about is the fact that the wireless network is a bigger network and is pervasive throughout the organization. And that provides a path through these devices. The devices become sort of the stepping stone to get into the network. When you look at in buildings, we see the concern with medical systems that are wireless now. So GE and Siemens and all those companies are putting medical devices in hospitals. We're seeing the HVAC systems in buildings. So those are sort of the, let's say, the enabled systems, the IoT enabled systems that you're seeing in organizations. In the home, we're seeing appliances, but we haven't really seen any, we've seen appliances in this recent attack where they took control of cameras that were out of date and they aimed them at the DNS provider and shut down part of the internet. So we've seen those kinds of attacks.
Oh, that was the recent big one a couple months ago. That's how they did it.
Shut
down the East Coast and stuff. Yeah,
it did. Yeah. Oh. And so they basically compromised, I think they used about 100,000 infected devices to attack a DNS service, and shut down some of the connections for some of the organizations, some of the big organizations, PayPal, Spotify, Amazon were all hit by this.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Interesting.
So,
all right. So tell me what Pony Express does let's go through the nuts and bolts and how you solve that problem and how it works.
Sure. Well, we got involved with this about a couple of years ago. We were looking at building a solution that was based on an initial product we had. A company said to us, you know, we can't see what's plugged into our networks. And they're talking about the wired network. So we started to work on that, and wireless became obviously an issue, and BYOD became an issue. I don't think people were thinking about IoT. IoT was a phrase 3 years ago, but it wasn't in common use.
Right.
I think even now organizations are just starting to think about IoT. So BYOD became the driver, and how are they going to deal with this? Because most IT security folks think in terms of what they own and control on the network. So if I own what's on the network, I can control it, I can patch it, I can provision it, that's mine. When it comes in from the outside, I don't think of that as mine. I think of that as, well, I'll give you public Wi-Fi, I'll give you access, but I'm not. That's not my device, that's not on me. And I think what organization, and that's one of the reasons you're seeing a delay in the policies and the shift to how to deal with this stuff. So what we decided to do was focus on helping them in a non-intrusive way, in a passive way, identify and catalog and basically build a very clean asset list of everything that's in and around the organization. What comes in at 8 in the morning, what leaves at 6 at night, what comes in the evening, what leaves, what's there, what's not there, and things that come in one time or things that you've never seen before and they come in and they're persistent. So if you can develop a good baseline, which is what we help companies do, then you can look for the anomalies. You can look for the things that maybe they don't belong. Or maybe they're misconfigured things that you don't even know that are there. We find organizations looking for older devices they don't even know that are in place. So imagine now you're the security guy for a hospital group or a bank that has 50 or 100 locations. You don't get to all those locations. You're in one location. And if you could, with basically, from one console, see every device that's communicating in your organization, that really puts you in a very strong position from a security standpoint. So that's what we do. We have a cloud-based system called Pwn Pulse, and we use very low-cost sensors that get plugged into locations, and they automatically connect. They automatically start populating with all the devices that are there. You don't have to do anything. You just plug it in. It loads to the cloud. It doesn't touch your network. So it's built, purpose-built basically to do this and to be built outside your network. And to sort of think of it this way, right? The stuff you're trying to track is already outside your network. It's coming, it's going. You can't see it with your existing systems, and we'll provide that to you. And that's a very powerful, powerful piece of information for understanding your security risk, understanding the threats to the organization and potential risks that these devices present to financial loss or compromise of IP or taking down systems that are already in place. We've seen, and I can give you some of those examples, but that's what we see people doing with this is using it, for those cases. And we built it to be simple. We thought, look, we're going to do this. This can't be complicated. This has to be very, very simple. So that's, it's a complex problem we're trying to solve, and we're trying to do it in a simple fashion.
Now, is this hardware or software or both? When you say plug in, could mean plug software in.
Right. So the sensors are actually hardware. I mean, you need antennas to be able to detect things, right?
Right.
You can't drop in just software. You actually have so we built small, small devices, a couple of small different devices with basically everything on board to start doing this automatically. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to touch the box. Just plug it in. And then it's connected to a cloud service that we host on Amazon that has basically all the software to pull in the data and give you the information that you need. So you log on to this service that we provide. And the sensors are all part of the service. They're all part of the subscription. So it's very, very simple to implement this. And you don't have to integrate it. You don't have to do anything. You just drop these things in. If it's for example, if you have 20 branch banks, you get 20 sensors, you plug them in, you're good to go. If you have some larger facilities, they may require 2 or 3 sensors to do a larger facility. So very, very, very lightweight, low cost, and scalable solution.
Now, forgive my ignorance. Why is this not detected at the network level? And why aren't these devices seen on the network as a, for lack of a better term, an IP address or a network node or a MAC address? Or why aren't they seen in that level? Is it just too voluminous? Well, there's too many things coming and going? Or
it's a combination of things. There's organizations are in different places as far as their ability to see things on the network. So clearly, organizations, organizations with a lot of technology have ability to see what's on the network. There's no question they can do that with a lot of technology that's implemented across their enterprise. But the devices are coming, many of the devices that are coming in don't even touch the network. So they come into the facility and leave the facility. They can't see those devices.
Okay.
There's a lot of devices that are built to operate on different channels of the wireless band. So you have, let's say you have a wireless network and it's geared to operate on channel 6 or whatever channel you happen to use. There are devices that won't be seen by that network because they're not communicating. They're communicating on different channels. So to really see everything that's in the airspace, you have to be able to see all the channels, all the bands. And to do that, you basically have to have something purpose-built to do that. A lot of the access points that are in place have some detection capabilities, but it's generally limited to the channel or the bands that they're on. And in many cases, organizations turn those features off because they're trying to provide more bandwidth.
Yeah, that's true.
More devices come in.
Yep.
They don't want to kill the bandwidth. So if you're in the IT organization, you don't want to get that call that says, well, wait a minute, we're not getting enough bandwidth here. This isn't working, you know. So you turn those things off.
So give me some examples of types of companies that would use this on an enterprise level, like really, you know, like you don't have to name their names, but like what's like your biggest client? How many antennas you got out there for them?
Sure. So we started rolling this out last year, and it's sort of a crawl, walk, run the way we've come to market with this. And we basically start a POC, basically, a proof of concept where we might go into 3 or 4 or 5 locations, test it out. They're curious as to what they're going to see. They want to compare it to the network that they have, to what they think they already see. And pretty much across the board, they're going to be shocked by what they see. They're going to see a lot of things they never thought were there. And so that, based on that, it builds a business case for how far they want to go. What we see is we see sales going into mid-sized banks with 20 to 100 locations. We see this going into medical services groups and hospital groups. You know, as a lot of our doctors and local organizations have consolidated into these bigger groups, all of a sudden you have someone that has now 100 medical offices or hospitals, and they have no way to understand what's in all the IT across those organizations. We're going into power plants that are trying to get an idea about what's operating in the power plant. They're very concerned about what's there. Excuse me. We did a project with a stadium on the West Coast that's pretty well known, Levi's Stadium up there in Santa Clara. They have 1,200 access points. And we are now, we've been in there doing projects for both football and soccer. And this is a good example because it'll give you an idea about the kinds of things that everybody can relate to. And you can relate this to a bank or to a hospital as well. There's critical infrastructure that's being run on wireless networks. They want to primarily protect that. So whether it's a patient system with personal information on it, whether it's a bank Wi-Fi system that they're now using to have their customers access the apps, they're trying to show them how to use the apps to access their bank account rather than come into the bank to do business, or whether it's a stadium that has ticket scanners and communication systems with teams, all this wireless infrastructure is mission critical to the organization delivering its value proposition to its customers and protecting its operations. So. What's happened to our business is once organizations saw what they could do with the technology, they became very interested in monitoring their mission-critical systems, baselining those and saying, okay, we have 100 of these or 50 of those. Let's make sure that no one is talking to those systems with the devices they're bringing in. So it's evolved from sort of identifying devices and identifying assets that we do easily to monitoring the critical infrastructure and making sure that nobody is talking to that infrastructure and trying to disrupt that infrastructure.
Well, I'm really happy to hear this about the electrical grid stuff, because I did a show with Cisco about smart cities and the grid and things like that. And I was very pleased to hear that they, you know, that part of our security is taken very seriously, obviously, but more seriously than I thought it was. And I'm glad to look into these type of things, because no matter how good you build your system, there's always somebody that's going to eventually figure out a different way around it. So I'm asking a lot of these questions because I'm going this direction with these things.
Let me ask, make a comment on the electrical.
Yeah,
grid
go ahead.
Stuff.
Yeah.
When you think of we all drive by an electrical substation, right? We know what they are. It's that place with a fence around it with
right.
big powerful looking boxes full of electricity and cables and wires coming in and so on and so forth, and it's all fenced off. So those substations, the way when a truck comes up to service that, oftentimes there's a wireless connection to that system from the truck. And so all these access points, just like, say, a wireless network in a distributed branch system or in the hospitals that we talked about that have all these devices communicating, that system, they want to make sure that it's just that truck driver, that service person connecting to that. There's nobody else trying to connect to that. And, of course, they're secured and they're password protected and all the right things, but they're vulnerable because they're an access point, and access points can be hacked. So, you know, we are not in large deployment yet, but we're in test with a lot of these types of organizations.
Well, some of those stations are in the middle of nowhere, and it's not a big, giant power center you see on TV in a superhero movie. It's just a little station with a couple of transformers and a fence around it, and somebody visits it once in a while. And I was even surprised to hear that some of them are still not on the net. There's some old-fashioned places out there still. They're working on it, right? So this device, if you put that out there, would, you know, if people aren't really paying attention because it's lighting a town of 500 people and nobody's that concerned, your device would detect some guy on a cell phone, the same phone that comes up there every couple of weeks, maybe he's doing surveillance, right? Which kind of leads me to this idea of how much can Pony Express be used for terrorism, possible terrorism detection or activity, right? Identifying certain phones or certain devices that keep popping up in a pattern, so to speak. So do you have analytics built into this to help with
well,
that kind of thing?
So now you're getting into an area that gets really interesting, because once you get into the cell phone network, so can we detect cell phone signals? Yes, we absolutely can do it. Technically, we can do it. Legally, it's a different question,
okay.
Right? Because that cell phone connection is protected. It's considered a private connection between you and your carrier.
Well, I'm not talking about the data or your phone call, but just the connection itself is considered private?
So there's a debate about how much of that is private. The
okay.
actual call out to the tower is something that some people think you can grab, some people think you can't grab.
Oh, interesting.
Data, yeah, I mean, we can't get a clear answer on it, but law enforcement can do it. So what we can detect is we can detect the wireless signal, we can detect a Bluetooth signal, and fortunately, most people leave those on. So
right.
Chances are we'll see that. Now, if they shut that off, can we see the cell connection? Can we see the cell signal? We can. If we can get a clear reading on just detecting the phone and saying, look, this is an AT&T phone, and leave it at that, we'd love to do that. We think that the terrorist case that you just described is an exact reason why we should be able to do that.
Right.
Now, law enforcement can do it, and they have, as we all see in the movies, they have all kinds of stuff to do that, and they do have access to that, and they're the only ones that have really the right to use it. So I think this is a great topic, Chuck, because you know, if you're not interfering with the personal data, which is what people want to protect, you're just now tracking the device. The phone companies track the devices anyhow, so
right,
you know, why not do it from a defensive? If you know there's a cell tower in the woods, or there's a electrical substation, or a water substation or pump, and those things are all being serviced through either the internet or a wireless connection or a cell phone connection. Some of the cases you painted where they don't have wireless, they'll use other kinds of connections. So why not monitor those, right? Why not have the ability to monitor those? I mean, that totally makes sense.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, if you turn your Bluetooth on your phone and do a search, all these people's phones around you pop up on there. So it's really not private. I mean, if you don't turn your phone off to not be a detective, most people don't, right? You'll see their phone name, not their MAC address or anything, right? But so I'm with you. I don't think that's a great argument on their part to say, oh, that's private. Well, that's not really private because it's on a public airway and a network. I'm not going to listen to your calls. That's private. Maybe my carrier's private. I get that part. But you know what? There's a phone around here with a signal. I don't think that's private. And I think we should look at that more carefully. But let's outsmart them on that. Let's outsmart the lawyers. You still got a Bluetooth signal and you got a wireless signal. And guess what? That probably means some guy's on a phone standing outside the Renoco Canada substation that nobody comes to except every 5 years. And maybe we need to look at that and say, wait a minute, there's a device out here that's not part of our maintenance devices or networks, right? So tell me how the data is crunched now. So we go out, we search. Let's take the studio. I'm from a studio. So I worked at Fox. I put this in my Fox Network Center, and I'm going to pick up 5,000 devices a day, literally, coming and going. And people bringing their phones. How much real time does Pony Express gather that data, crunch it, throw it in a database, and allow me, the security guy, to say, wait a minute, this guy right here, I got to look at this. Is it real time?
Sure, I'll give you a couple examples that will make this clear. First of all, just to be clear, on the last point, the Wi-Fi signal and the Bluetooth is in the airspace, and we do grab that, and we do grab the MAC addresses. Interestingly enough, the MAC address is – so, and we can correlate. If you connect to a network, we'll grab the IP. If you're in the Bluetooth, we'll grab that MAC address. If you're on Wi-Fi, we'll grab that. And we'll correlate all that information. So we'll be able to say, hey, this device came in, connected to your network. It also had its Bluetooth on. It also had its Wi-Fi on. Those are all different numbers, by the way. So it takes a little bit of doing to do that. As far as the – In the case of you're at Fox and you're if you're in a facility where there's a lot of devices, where there's a lot of traffic outside, we're trying to sort the data into, think of it as sort of three buckets. One is, call it noise. It's stuff that goes by the building. It comes into the lobby. It leaves. It's there one time. It's noise. It may be interesting that it was there. It may, if there was an incident 6 months from now, you may want to go back and figure out what was there. But other than that, you really don't want to look at that data. The second category would be what you're trying to understand is your baseline of, these are the people who come in and leave every day. So, and you can see what time they come in and what time they leave. And you can correlate that information with whatever directory information you have about assets in your organization. Now, most people don't have a good asset list, so this will allow them to get a good handle on that. Or many employees that have issued, company-issued devices, will also bring their own device, and you'll be able to get a handle on that. And then the third category is really where you're looking for the anomalies, either known bad devices. So, for example, if we see a Hack 5 pineapple, we're going to tell you have a Hack 5 pineapple, and we're going to put a red alert on that, because chances are that's a very bad thing and you don't want to have that there. If there's a wireless keylogger, we're going to tell you about that. So anything that's a known, purposely built known, we'll tell you, known bad thing, we will tell you about that. That's an evil device. Or if it's a, in the same third category, if it's something that falls outside of what you consider to be normal. So what might be normal? If you know, Fox may have been a 24-hour operation, so it's not like most businesses. But in an operation that's only open during the day, if something shows up at 3 in the morning, is it the security guard or is it something else? So that's one way that we would deal with that. And then the other way we deal with that, Chuck, would be a persistent device, something that was not in the baseline that shows up and it's on all the time, or it's on for a few hours a day or something like that. So a good example of that, Chuck, would be a really interesting case would be the card skimmers that are in gas stations.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Those are Bluetooth enabled. That's how the bad guy gets the information, from the card skimmer. So, you know, we all drive into a gas station. We fill up. If we have Bluetooth on, it's going to pick that up as a Bluetooth device in a Ford car, let's say. But if we're not going to know what a skimmer device is, they're not publishing the MAC addresses of those things.
That's right.
But if it sits there for 2 or 3 hours, you know, it doesn't take you 2 or 3 hours to fill up with gas, right? So So that'll trigger an alarm in that case. So those are some examples. You know, so if you think of the three buckets, you have noise, you have stuff that belongs, and you have stuff that looks weird or is known bad or is behaving badly.
So I like to use the Donald Rumsfeld, the unknown unknowns, whatever that, you know, that thing he said about the known knowns and stuff. It's actually right. Kind of brilliant. People make fun of it, but if you think it through. So I like all these things you're capturing. If I was the guy at Fox buying this and using it, I'd have a lot of fun with it. But I'd come to you and say, Paul, here's what I want you to be able to do. I want you to put this in a database, and I want to write some algorithms based on what I think is important and what I'm looking for. For example, I might want to know any device that comes in on the third Sunday of every month, because I might be having an investigation right now that's looking for a particular bad guy, and I know that there's a theft every Sunday. Every third Sunday, something gets ripped off. And my theory might be, I think it's a delivery guy, because we get deliveries every third Sunday, and I want to know who comes in on that day. And Sunday's a slow day at the studio, and we do have Fox football on Sunday, but I might want to use it for investigative purposes. Can we take the data and then crunch it with these queries and find, like, that needle in the haystack?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, you could write – there's a rules engine, which is really simple. You just basically – tell it, you know, this is the day and this is the device. I want to look with it. I want to track things within this time frame or whatever. It's going to do that anyhow, but it'll flag them for you automatically if that's how you want to do it. It will actually, in the case of, we've been at some critical events with this stuff. And there are, if you know the delivery guy comes in on Sunday, you already have his MAC address, right?
So I probably caught it before, right? But I want to see if it's repetitive and it keeps coming and. Then I know it's right, that particular guy.
You just put that MAC address in and say, when this MAC address comes in, let me know about it. I mean, you can track the specific device. You can track the time. Anything that we capture can be tracked and flagged. So we've built in a lot of these, these policies. Let's call them policies for a second.
Yeah, it's a good way to describe it. Yeah.
And you can map. You can just turn them on. So you might say, you might say, yeah, in this facility between these hours, if anything comes in, let me know, right?
Right.
So it's stuff like that. Or you could say, here's one that I never knew this, but drones, right? Drones are access points.
That was my next question. My next question, yeah. Right. I can land a drone on top of some guy's house and put a little, monitor out there and grab your Wi-Fi and watch everything you're doing. And you never know the drone's on top of the house, right?
Right, but I can one-up you on that one. We see drones fly over the buildings in Boston Seaport where we're located, and we also know that you can run a karma attack from those drones. A karma attack will actually will receive the SSIDs that come from the Wi-Fi devices, and it'll spit them back to you as if it's the access point, your home access point.
Wow.
Your business access, and your phone will automatically connect to that. So I can fly a drone over a facility, and within an hour, I'll be spinning up hundreds of SSIDs, and there'll be hundreds of devices connecting to me, and everything will be going through my access point. So it's a classic man in the middle attack.
And do your radio antennas detect things that high?
We were at Black Hat when we were trying to meet. And we were sitting doing a demonstration, and all of a sudden we saw a comm attack at the show. Now,
oh no, kidding! At that really, because that hotel is a really high roof. I mean, the roof is gigantic; it's high, right? And so that drone had to be pretty high up in the air. Was it another attack?
It wasn't done by a drone.
Oh, okay.
It was done by an access. It was done by a malicious access point.
Okay. So during your demonstration, it's being attacked, and you're watching it.
Right. Right, and we're the only company to detect that at Black Hat. So you have all this technology running and all these security experts, and somebody uses one very simple device, turns on the karma attack. Hundreds of devices started connecting to those. We've also seen compromised, at trade shows, we've seen compromised Samsung televisions or whatever televisions they're using as their monitors. So we're finding that we can go to any public event, and we can for certain find people hacking into things and trying to disrupt things. So,
well, I was part of that attack because my phone seriously got whacked when I was there.
Are you kidding?
Oh, no, I'm serious. And I had a major problem with it. And then I got home, and I'm real big with connectivity and Google. You know, Google's connected all your devices and all that stuff. And then my home computer got whacked. When I'd say whacked, hacked. Whacked is more physical to me because it was a big mess. And it took me a couple months to get out of all this stuff. So I know that it's a funny you should say that because I'm pretty sure that was one of mine that was sucked into this thing. And it made doing the show difficult because I used the phone to use my GoPro and filming and things back then. So it was very, very
interesting. So this was at Black Hat?
Yeah, I was in the press room, and you were supposed to come see me in the press room. Remember where the press room is? And yes. Our scheduling got messed up or something happened. And I think you were just down the hall from there, if I remember where your demo was or something. And we didn't connect, and that's what's going on. I did like 50 shows there. I was there like 8 or 9 hours a day. And my device was on in one place all the time, right? So it was probably pretty easy to find, you know.
Oh, so we kept the records of that event. So if you want, we might have fun sometime and see if we can.
Oh, yeah, that'd
find...
be cool. That'd be really cool to find that out.
Right.
Right, so I'm really intrigued by this stuff. Now, does your system use artificial intelligence per se? I mean, if I'm configuring it, that's artificial intelligence for sure, but not in a good way. I'm using it in reverse when I say if I try to think something through. All right? So I want to find things that are smarter than me and, you know, looking for patterns, looking for the basics. I know you're talking about there's configurations, but is there any what do they call it, machine learning going on as you gather this data and it becomes petaphiles worth of data? Boy, that's valuable. There might be some answer to something really serious in there that we're missing unless we figure out how to analyze it.
Right. So we're keeping all the data and we're playing around with what we can find. We produce a report once a year, which is called the Internet of Evil Things. And we are in the process of compiling the new report. It'll be out in February, I think. But we sort of triangulate our information. You know, we'll take two or three pieces of information and try to deduce something from that. So some people will call that artificial intelligence. I think there's levels that we can get to that we're not at today, but we have the data.
Yeah, you'll get there.
And we'll get there. And a lot of it's driven, Chuck, by what do people want to know? And so we've developed this technology in market with right now we have over 100 customers, and they range in some of the industries that we've talked about. And their ideas about, so I'll give you an example. Here's a great one, right? And you don't think of these things until you actually walk into the customer situation. We're in one of the major ports, and the ports have been, you know, over the years have been notorious for having all kinds of bad stuff go down in ports because things are coming in, things get stolen. It's where people come together. So we've seen, you know, there's Wi-Fi on trucks, there's Wi-Fi on ships, there's all kinds of wireless and short range and long range systems for communicating and trucks and inventory and containers and you name it, and warehouses. And there have been some fairly famous, there was a good big famous case where a couple security guys had their lives threatened to help compromise one of the ports. So it's a very complicated environment where you have lots of people coming together and lots of different interests happening. So we're working with, you know, with a customer in that environment. They're trying to understand what do they have and how should they look at the data. So this is something that, you know, how to figure this stuff out really comes down to what the use cases are and what are they either trying to protect or what are they trying to figure out. And a lot of that comes down to what the devices are interacting with. So, you know, if the device, for example, the devices all send out pings of the SSIDs they're trying to connect to, or everyone that they've ever connected to. So if you've been to the airport, if you've been to the Marriott Hotel, wherever you've been, unless you've deleted those from your phone, they're still looking for those SSIDs. So you can pretty quickly profile what something connects to regularly, what it's connected to now, and where it's been and what it's been connected to. So there's a lot of stuff that we can do, and I think that's where we'll get the breakthroughs. You know, in the medical industry, it's different. If they're looking to protect, they're looking to track the systems they've bought. We had one hospital, they couldn't find the CAT scan machines that they purchased, which are really expensive.
Yeah.
Because they roll around, and they say, well, we had five of them. We can only find two of them. Can you guys help us find them?
Wow.
So, you know, some of it's really basic stuff like that, and some of it's more advanced. But if you think about, you know, if you think about the way hacks go down, they have to find, you know, it's a stepping stone approach to getting to the data. And so these devices are now part of the stepping stone, and the IoT is now part of the stepping stone. And we think we can play a role from an AI standpoint in helping deduce, you know, that.
So let's look at the data. I got a couple concepts that have come to mind now. And I've talked to other people that do artificial intelligence and machine learning in data for multiple clients, right? And they are the receptacle of all the data from all their clients. Now, I'm not going to take the Fox data and share it with Disney or vice versa, because it's my data, it's confidential, and you guys protect that data and you encrypt it and I get all that stuff. But think about it this way. If a bad guy is trying to attack us, hack us, and I'm going to use surveillance, I think is a more important thing, because there are very sophisticated surveillance devices out there that can walk around. Skimmers, right? Those are kind of a surveillance device. It's gathering things as it's in place, or even they have skimmers that as you walk through a crowd, gather them, right? So what if I'm a bad guy and I'm not going to attack just this hospital? I want to attack all their hospitals. I'm going to go out and do surveillance on all their hospitals. And I'm a needle in a haystack because I'm a guy that walks in a public area. I walk around. I look. I take some pictures. I seem completely benign to everybody. But to your device and your software, I could not be benign, because if I had the ability to say, wait a minute, this one device has popped up at 20 hospitals. That's one data set, right? But what if that same group or organization, let's say they're terrorists and bad guys, you know, they don't tend to target just one company. And if I'm trying to hack your network or use it through other devices to hack it, I might be going across all kinds of Fortune companies, Fortune 50s, Fortune 100s. I might be the same device or the same group of devices that are doing multiple surveillance, right? So if you own the data for the hospitals and Giant Grey, who's not really a competitor, but they're in the artificial intelligence business, right? And they have a data set for their customers. How can we get to a point where that data can be shared and analyzed? Because then that's, you know, that's aggregate. That's everybody's data being looked at one time. And I don't want to go Big Brother stuff on it, but I think we could really find a lot more stuff if we did that. Is there any working towards that kind of a blind sharing of data just to find things, you know?
Well, yes, we would love to do that. Today, companies are trying to do that just within their own organization with the stuff that we have, right? So, and we're not so, you know, we're not so widely distributed at this point. I mean, we're an early stage company, but
Sure. Yes,
we imagine being widely distributed and having enough out there so that that's actually a valuable use case. I think that to do that effectively, there's got to be, you know, we have to have a large footprint to make it valuable. But you're absolutely on the right track. Now,
it's not really the same as, I mean, it's data, but it's not really, it's not a bank record. It's not personally identifiable information. It's just kind of some network numbers or addresses or what. Do you think it would be not protected and looked at as being private? So I don't know it's private, but it's really not anything that's going to compromise an identity per se, right?
I don't see a problem with it at all. I mean, yeah. I don't see it any differently than, you know, when the FBI issues its top 10 wanted list. It's the same concept. It's about those individuals. It's not about that organization.
The top 10 MAC addresses wanted by the FBI. Find this MAC address.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're going to get to that. That'll be funny. Yeah.
But I think that's why your point is valid, that it's not a vulnerability I have in my network that I'm exposing to the world. It's a known bad person that we've seen in vicinity of our organization, and we're telling other organizations. I think that's totally I can't imagine people not wanting to share that information.
Yeah, and the drone thing really bothers me a lot, because I've had a couple of drone experts on here, and boy, the things that those can do. One guy programmed a drone. He bought it. And, you know, when you buy it, it's not registered. Anybody can buy it. He programmed it to fly the pathway of all Starbucks Wi-Fi networks and flew it all the way through New York anonymously by itself to its destination, and nobody knew who belonged to. And you want to put a bomb on the end of that thing or whatever you want to do for mischief? We got to get a handle on those kind of things. Now, are you working on any radio antennas that can, you know, go farther? I'm assuming this is fairly local area range, right? Are you looking at some things that can be shot from a microwave to catch things at a farther distance or something? Microwave might not be the right technology, but you know what I mean?
Right. So our device, our sensors are no different than an access point in that you can put a larger antenna on the system and it will have a greater range. So it's really driven by the antenna that you use more than anything else. We don't need a lot of these to do what we do. We can do an entire stadium with six boxes.
Oh, wow.
And Levi's Stadium has 1,200 access points. So it's a different sort of, technically it's a different, they're providing bandwidth to thousands of people. We're just passively listening. We don't have to support the kind of flow of information that you're talking about. We're getting bits of information. One of our sensors can handle, 50,000, MAC addresses with no problem whatsoever. So they have tremendous capacity. So then it all comes back to is the range. And the range is, again, you see a lot of access points, not so much because of the range, sometimes because of the range, but mostly because they're trying to pump out more bandwidth. It's just that the access points can't handle the bandwidth. And it may feel like, well, this is slow because I'm out of range, but it's mostly because of the bandwidth. So we think we can handle quite a lot, and we don't need... we have maybe a 3,000 foot range in the open, and if you put them up high, you'll be able to handle the drone problem. We don't think with any problem. We're looking at doing things, Chuck, like locating the devices, right? We have a project underway right now. Once you understand the device, how are you going to take it down, or how are you going to stop it? Well, one is you might just want to find it, and the second is to have some ability to actually stop it in its tracks. So imagine you're the security guy and then you're in New York at Fox and you see something happening at some remote outpost and you want to actually interfere with it and it's the middle of the night. What are you going to do, right? So those are some of the things we're trying to solve right now.
Now, is the data you collect, I know it goes to the cloud, but is it also stored locally on the device in case the cloud's not available?
It is not stored locally for a couple of security reasons. One is, we don't, if the device were to get compromised, the system will know the device is compromised, but there's no data on the device.
Okay.
And then in the cloud, we're using, we've got redundancy and backup. The Amazon Web Services are as good as they get. So we use, we use as much of their capacity and their encryption capabilities and their backup and redundancy and all the things. We have multiple systems that are rolling from one to the other all the time. So we built it the way you would construct a large scale enterprise class system, using that, using their services, which is as good as it gets. So we haven't had, the issue of, we haven't had that issue. There are some organizations that they have not adopted any sort of cloud technology yet. But for us as a developer, it's to develop this kind of capacity and capability and deliver it at the cost we deliver it for it would be impossible to deliver this as customized individual software on-premise solutions. So that's how we've made that decision to stick with that implementation.
Now, have you partnered with any other types of businesses like yours that would complement what you do? In other words, you do this piece and another guy does this other piece. And when you put those together, boom, we have a full-blown artificial intelligence network or something like that.
Sure. Well, the centralized single dashboard products, the security information event management, would be a natural place for us to partner. We've reached out to those companies. We've reached out to other companies that are part of the IT infrastructure.
Oh, good.
And we have a number of partnerships that are under development, none that we can announce yet, but some we'll be announcing next year.
Good. Yeah, I know Genentech has a great product for that kind of stuff, and they encourage working with other companies and stuff. They're a really good company. So I saw a lot of those at Black Hat and ISA West too. So I'm glad, when I started doing this show about 3 years ago, I've seen a tremendous growth in cooperation. And, if I was at ISA West 10 years ago, it's like, I'm not talking to that guy in the booth next to me. That's my business, and this is his business, and we don't share data. Are you finding that companies are, picking up the phone and saying, you know what, let's work together on things? It seems like that's happening in the IT side of things.
Well, it's happening more on the security side of things because I think we all got the message, you know, going back, this goes back to, you know, the major terrorist events that wake up call for all of us. But I mean, I think the attitude has changed through government and through business. But I do think that the obstacle is more technical than it is policy. And that most of the technologies that are in place were built at a different time, and they were built sort of in silos. I can tell you that in our organization and our investors and other companies that I know of that are newer to the marketplace, all these products are built to interact with other products. It's the only way to go. And so we started with that as a premise. And we built this with the APIs, and we built this so that it could actually be adopted by other companies and branded by other companies. We're trying to provide a platform to do this. We're not trying to provide something that's just exclusive to us. Yeah. It is a proprietary platform, but we use a lot of open source tools. And it's only proprietary platform so that we can make a business out of it.
Sure, absolutely,
than that,
yeah.
We're trying to make it as connected as possible.
Paul, fascinating conversation. I'm so glad we connected finally. Give us your website, how we can get a hold of you guys.
Okay, so it's Pony Express, PWNIEEXPRESS. So that's the website. And you know, there's a lot of information there. And we do a lot of stuff online, so we'd be happy to,
We didn't play your video. How long is your video? We can play that at the end.
I think it's about a minute and a half. It's
Travis, can we play?
Shows you what one guy can do with some evil devices. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, so we'll say goodnight and close the show, and we'll play that video to close. How about that, Travis? Is that good? All right. Paul, thanks for Skyping in. You're welcome on the show anytime. And we're going to close out tonight with Paul's video here from Pony Express. And thanks for following us on Security Guy Radio. We'll see you next Monday. Play the video, Mr. Travis.